Okay, first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me this opportunity to present our recent activity. So today I would like to talk about the ferroelectric properties and also the dielectric response of various magnets. And especially I want to focus on the role of spin current. So these are my collaborators, and recently I have some collaboration in Korean university group, and also the first principle calculations by Terakura Sensei's group. So there are two kinds of heavy magnets. So the one is driven by the frustrated exchange interactions. And if you do the Fourier transformations of JIJ, then you obtain some peak positions at, in general, incommensurate positions, Q. Then if you fix the magnitude of each spin SI, then you need to make a spiral or a helical structure because of this constraint. So this is a possibility first proposed by Yoshimori in Japan long time ago. But in this case, you fix the momentum position capital Q and also minus capital Q. So another possibility is given by the Jarosinski-Moria interaction. So in this case, the spiral is induced by this famous Jarosinski-Moria interaction term. And then if you assume, for example, the cubic symmetry, and in the continuum approximations, so you have some degeneracy with respect to the direction of a spiral wave number, capital Q. And in this case, the rotating plane is perpendicular to the spiral direction. So this momentum Q plays the role of the dynamical variable in this Jarosinski-Moria-induced spiral states. So these are a different class of spiral Hellman. So I think now we already heard about the ferroelectric moment induced by the tilted or non-collinear spin structure. Then I can skip most of the story. But this is our theory background, why I presented that Jarosinski-Moria, inverse Jarosinski-Moria interaction for the ferroelectric moment. So the idea is twofold. So the one is the creation of so-called super spin current, and the other is so-called Ahern-Kescher effect. So the, this is probably familiar for the theorist, but let me explain briefly. So once you have spin moment Sx, Sy, and Sz, we have a commutation relationship between the spin moments. So if you take the Sx, Sy commuting to produce a Sz moment, so then this xy plane angle theta is a conical conjugate to the Sz. So that's why once you have the different angle in the neighboring magnetic ions, then you produce a super spin current of the Sz component. So this tilted or the non-collinear structure produce the super current, spin current. And once you have a spin current, then that will produce an electric field. So this is given by the duality relationship between the electricity and the magnetism. Suppose you have an electric charge current, then that produces a magnetic field rotating like this. But once you have a magnetic monopole instead, then you create the electric field rotating in this way. But there is no magnetic monopole in nature, but instead you have a magnetic dipole. Then this dipole current, that is nothing but the spin current, can produce superpositions of two rotating electric fields in the opposite direction. So that results in this transverse electric field. So this scenario can be very neatly expressed in the gauge coupling between the spin current and also the some vector potential, which is given by the E cross spin moment. So this interaction leads to the ferroelectric moment once you have this super spin current. So this idea has been realized in concrete calculations for the this cluster model with two magnetic ions and oxygen moment, oxygen orbitals in between. And I assume the spin of the coupling here and the hybridization between the d and p orbitals. So this is basically the super exchange models discussed by Kanamori, Hasegawa and Anderson many years ago. And then the only new ingredient is that we assume some non-collinear spin structure in the neighboring magnetic ions. Then if we fix the direction, then you create the polarization along this direction. So what we found is this polarization, it can be expressed in terms of the spin current. And this spin current is naturally given by SI cross S1 cross S2. But including this coefficient, this expression is perfectly fitted in terms of the spin current, because you can calculate the spin current between the two ions, different two ions with a different spin direction. So that's why we claim that the spin current is the most fundamental concept to describe the ferroelectric moment induced in this magnetic system. So similar idea has been developed by Maxim and also Elgio. So then we predict the ferroelectric moment for spiral, cycloidal spiral, and it has been realized in materials. So then I will focus on the recent achievements or development in this field. So the one is a more microscopic theory, including the various d-electron configurations and also the first principle calculations. And later I will focus on this dynamics or the fluctuations of this heli-magnetic system. Now, here is some partial list of various magnet electric or multiferric systems. And then we have many d-electron configurations. Then we want to develop the microscopic theory for the ferroelectric moment induced in this generic d-electron configuration. So these are some busy transparency, but there are messages, it is straightforward. So the one is there are three kinds of contributions to the ferroelectric moment of magnetic origin. So the one is a famous magnetostriction contribution, but this one is non-zero only when you have broke the inversion symmetry between the two magnetic ions. So this is a well-known term. And there are two contributions coming from the spin orbit coupling. So the one is this spin current contribution I just described and given by the vector spin chirality between the two neighboring magnetic ions like this. And this is some new findings, so-called we call the orbital contributions. And this one is given by this inner product of unit vector connecting the two ions and the magnetic moment at site R, and just this. And this is a minus sign. So that means this contribution cannot contribute to the uniform ferroelectric moment, but it can contribute to the finite momentum component of the ferroelectric moment, electric moment, right? So there are three contributions. And from the viewpoint of the spin orbit coupling, there are three kinds of contribution. One is some spin orbit coupling within the T2G manifold, and the other is a mixing between the T2G and EG, because there is no matrix element of the spin orbit coupling within the EG manifold. So that's why this is only two contribution to the spin orbit coupling. And in addition, we could have a spin orbit coupling at the oxygen orbital. And within this T2G, you have spin orbit coupling that leads to this second and third contributions. And this is active only when you have a partially filled T2G orbital. and it is excluded in this electron configuration. Compared with this, this number 2 and number 3 are active in all the d electron contributions. And these classifications can be experimentally detected by analyzing the uniform and also the finite momentum electric polarizations. Then we list here the older contribution here. But now we want to know by first principle calculation what is the most dominant contribution to the real magnetic system, to the electric polarization. So this is the first principle calculation for the lanthanum chromium O3 with the D3 system. So here is a density of state. But what I want to focus on here is that if you rotate the spiral plane along the B axis, then the polarization is rotating in a similar way with the cosine and sine dependence. So that means this polarization is strictly given by the SI cross SGA, namely the spin current contribution is the most dominant one in this configuration. So this one is not contradicting with the group theoretical analysis given by Harris and Ahorny and his company. And this is some analysis for the terbium manganese oxide case. And this one is consistent with this calculation. But what I want to claim here is that quantitatively, this cosine and sine dependence clearly shows that independent of this group theoretical analysis, the SI cross SJ is the dominant contribution to the electric polarization. So the spin current scenario works here. And here is a more serious calculation for the manganese ion, manganese oxide. So we change the rare earth ions and change the distortions and the Yantera distortion and the octahedron rotation, etc. So these we put the observed values, and then we calculate the ferroelectric moment. And then, interestingly, there is a change of the sign as you increase the radius of rare earth. So, so this one means that we have some non-trivial contribution by the mixing of EG and T2G orbital, etc. So then. We also change the magnetic ions from titanium to the iron, increasing the number of d electrons. So these are highly non-trivial d electron dependence. So first, we expected that this polarization should be maximum or the largest for the partially filled T2g electrons, but that is not the case. Right, so the largest one is actually the iron. Iron is a D5, so all the electrons are occupied for each majority spin orbitals. But this one is large because the inter T2G and EG spin orbital coupling is the most effective one for the ferroelectric moment. So that's why this iron is largest in magnitude. And also, in the manganese case, you have a different sign. So that's why, in this case, you have also the contribution between the occupied T2G to the unoccupied EG with the parallel spin. So these are different contribution gives you some sign change. So that's why the you have to worry about the interference effect between the different magnetic spin orbital channels in this electric configuration. So we also excluded the spin orbital coupling at the oxygen site, but the result doesn't change. So that's why the spin orbital coupling at the oxygen site does not contribute so much to the ferroelectric moment. So from this consideration, we concluded that the EG T2G mixing spin orbital coupling is the dominant channel for the ferroelectric moment. So this is our recent result from the first principle calculation. So in the remaining time, I want to turn to the dynamics or the fluctuation of ferroelectric spiral systems. So this is some old story that a long time ago Professor Nagamiya discussed about the spin wave spectroscopy, spin wave theory for this spiral ferromagnet. Right. The only new ingredient we added is to have a coupling between the magnon and the ferroelectric moment. So because this spiral breaks all the spin rotational symmetry, accordingly, we have three kinds of corrective modes, so-called Goldstone bosons for this problem. So one is a sliding mode, namely this phason degrees of freedom has zero energy in the zero momentum limit. And the other is a rotations of this spiral plane with the rotation axis along this direction and also the B axis this direction. So now we analyze all the Green's functions and so on. And actually this Braden's group at the Kern University did an inelastic neutron experiment with a fully spin polarized neutron. Then they could analyze the polarization directions, spin polarization direction. And their assignment is a foreign. So this is the center of the incommensurate Brillouin zone. And the lowest energy one is a phason, just like this. Because this is incommensurate, we expect zero energy for the phason fluctuation. And this largest one, around 2.5 milli electron volt. So this one is electromagnon, namely the rotation of this spiral plane with the rotation axis around the B axis, right? So this is the highest one. And this one is another corrective mode associated with the fluctuation of the rotating plane in this direction. And they concluded that this energy is quite consistent with Professor Roydor's group, this peak, which develops below the, as you decrease the temperature. And accordingly, we analyzed the, this infrared spectroscopy, namely the directed constant induced by the electromagnon. And we estimated the strengths of oscillator strengths, and also the frequency, and the D is the anisotropy energy, etc. And we compare the theoretical value and the observed value for the oscillator strengths. So at that time, we believed that this one is not so bad. But actually, the recent experiment shows even larger oscillator strengths for this infrared absorption. And now we believe that this contribution is not the dominant one. And this electromagnon absorption is a tiny part of the total spectroscopy. So then we need to develop a more complete theory to describe the fluctuations of this spiral heli-magnet. So before doing that, so this is introduction of Professor Tokura's work, and also a recent preprint by Roydor group gives a similar result. So there are three points of my interest. So the one is a very strong anisotropy of the directed constant or direct functions, and the A-axis epsilon is always the dominant, independent of the direction of the spontaneous polarization in the spiral phase. So this is the most important aspect. And another is there is no sharp peak. Even though you may interpret this as a broadened sharp peak, but more likely is a continuum. So this is the second aspect. And lastly, this survives even in the collinear spin density wave phase. Actually, there is some recent theory preprint by Chupin, but he claimed, she claimed that the C-axis direct constant is enhanced by her mechanism. But actually, this A-axis contribution is by far the most prominent features. So that's why I think this one cannot explain this A-axis directed response. So why A-axis is so dominant? So let me explain you why. So actually, if you look at the spin structure within the AC plane, so the B axis is the spiral direction, but let me focus on the collinear state. So the direction of the collinear moment is along the B axis, and we have a ferromagnetic interaction along the A axis, and the anti-ferromagnetic interaction along the C axis. So this is a configuration. And then I take only one sheet of an AC plane and construct the spin wave theory. Then I can diagonalize very easily the spin wave operators, alpha and beta, which is given by the Bogoliubov transformation through the original bosons, Hohenstein-Polyakov bosons defined at A site and B site. And then what I can do is, depending on this spin current scenario, I can calculate the polarization operators for A axis, B axis, and C axis. So first, the B axis, this is parallel to the collinear magnetic moment, is zero. So this you can understand very easily because the polarization is coming from the fluctuation within this AC plane. But now, if you calculate the C axis PC, then it's just given by this combination, right? Always alpha dagger alpha and beta dagger beta appears. But in sharp contrast to the C-axis polarization, for the A-axis polarization, we have additional contributions, which is given by the A dagger, beta dagger. So that's why even in the zero temperature case, namely the vacuum of the alpha and beta particles, spin wave operators, then you can create the, this alpha and beta. So that gives you the two magnon contributions and the continuum to the A-axis dielectric responses. So the difference between this ferromagnetic and anti-ferromagnetic coupling leads to the dramatic difference between the A-axis and the C-axis dielectric response. And when the quantum mechanics is a very important, namely the anti-ferromagnetic case, we have quantum fluctuations, but not in this ferromagnetic case. That leads to the quite a different dielectric responses between the A and C axis. And then the picture is just this. In the spiral heavy magnet case, usually you just produce the C axis contribution at each plane, B plane. Then you have some tiny fluctuation around that. So that is a picture I presented previously, namely the RPA theory is just considered a small fluctuation. But the problem in reality, that is completely different from this picture, namely you have lots of quantum fluctuations along within the AC plane, and this center of mass is a little bit shifted, so that leads to the spiral formation. Then the most important contribution is coming from this two magnon process, and this onset of this spiral gives you the static ordered moment of electric polarizations. But if you look at the dynamics or the dielectric response, this whole thing contributes most dominantly. So that is my interpretation of the experimental data. So with this, now I want to study the effect of the fluctuations in the heavy magnets. So there are two kinds of possible fluctuations. So the one is this excitations of phason degrees of freedom, and then that can disorder the total system to end up with the spin liquid crystal. So this possibility has been mentioned a long time ago by those people due to the quantum fluctuations. But instead of this, you can excite the magnons, right? Then you can have a projection of the spiral configuration into the B axis that results in the sinusoidal collinear spin density wave. So in order to study the competition between this and this, first, I construct the Ginzburg-Randall theory and discuss about the thermal and classical fluctuations of these Hell magnets. So you can construct a spin operator in terms of the two slowly bearing A and B fields carried by the cosine and the sine, Q dot R. Then the free energy is summarized in this way. So you have a usual derivative terms and also the second order terms and the quadratic terms. But the most interesting is this characteristic term, V term. So if you are starting from the usual Heisenberg case, this V term is just given by the one minus one third of a U term, because the S force average is just given by this combination. So now we are starting from V is minus one third of the U case. Okay, yeah. But in that case, you have there are several interactions that could give you the deviations of this ratio from one third. So that's why, depending on the additional interaction, starting from the simple-minded Heisenberg case, you have lots of possibilities. So then we are interested in the total phase diagram. So previously, people just considered this kind of phase diagram without this new phase. So this is a new phase we found, that there occurs the attractive force and the binding between the A particle and B particles, A field and B field, to result in the, some kind of a chiral spin liquid. Namely, even though there is no long-range ordering, you have a vector spin chirality long-range order. So this results in the ferroelectric moment, actually. And if you go to this positive V case, you have a collinear state. But as I mentioned, in real materials, your V term is nearly minus one third. So that's why this non-collinear phase is almost irrelevant to the real systems. And we expected that in some materials, this V parameter is shifted to this negative side. So maybe at above the spiral transition temperature, we could have a very interesting chiral spin liquid phase. But actually, up to now, this phase is not observed. So why? This was some suggestion to the experimental systems. So first, we thought that this lithium copper oxide might be the candidate for this. But it turned out that this interval phase is a collinear state again. So now back to this Togura sensei's experiment. So first, you have a collinear state, and this spiral C-axis contributions grows if you as you reduce the temperature. And even at the lowest temperature, this elliptic ratio is around 0.7. So you still have a lot of quantum fluctuation. This is consistent with our interpretation of the magneto-electric electromagnon spectroscopy. So then we developed some quantum theory of Heli magnets, so in terms of the Schrödinger boson. So we are starting from these expressions of the spin in terms of a boson operator with a constraint. Then usually people describe the magnetic ordering in terms of the boson condensations of the Schrödinger boson. But now we have two-stage phase transitions in this scenario. Namely, first, we make a spectrum of Schrödinger bosons, which is given by this. And you have a minimum at around Q half and minus Q half. Q is vector, wave vector corresponding to the spiral. But now you have a gap. So that's why there is no long-range ordering. Then if you reduce the temperature, this gap is reduced. Then if you write the Hamiltonian in terms of this boson operator, right, gamma, which is given by the Bogoliubov transformation from the original bosons, then this interaction U grows as the inverse of this gap delta. So that's why before the Bose condensation occurs, you have a density wave instability of this Schrödinger bosons. That is exactly the collinear spin state. So that's why the collinear spin state has a kind of charge density wave of the Stringer bosons. And once if you touch this zero energy, then the real Bose condensation occurs. So that Bose condensation exactly corresponds to the onset of the spiral and the onset of the super spin current and the ferroelectricity. And actually, this one is more promising to describe the successive phase transitions in the terbium manganese oxide and also dysprosium manganese oxide. So from that viewpoint, so the dielectric properties of a magnetic system is very important. Namely, we can define the spin current flowing in this magnetic systems, and you can define the conductivity of the spin current, sigma over. Of course, this is not observed in the electric means, but you can observe this in terms of the dielectric response of the magnetic system. But here you have I omega. So the this relationship is different from the usual one. Namely, the spin current dielectric constant times omega square is nothing but the observed epsilon omega. So this is a formula connecting the spin current physics to the dielectric properties. OK, let me summarize here. So what I want to stress here is spin current induced polarization in ferromagnets. And we have developed a microscopic theory based on the electronic structure. And the role of spin fluctuation in ferromagnets is very important. And I claim that this magnetic manganese oxide, very quantum mechanical fluctuating systems, and spin current conductivity reveals itself in the dielectric response. And lastly, I couldn't have talked about this new spin texture. It is stabilized by the very phase, but let me give me 1 or 2 minutes. So Professor Tokura touched on these issues a little bit. Okay. So now we can observe the this texture or the defects in the lattice of the spiral in this Gelsinski Moria induced spiral systems, Heli magnets. For example, the manganese oxide shows a very interesting phase diagram as a function of temperature and pressure, and in this you observe the non-film leakage. And actually, in these materials, you have this disordering of a direction of the spiral, and this Newton scattering experiment is distributed strength over the sphere of momentum space. Okay. Now, what we did is to construct the effective theory for the spiral magnet with Gelsinski-Moria interaction terms. And now, you introduce two fields, N1 and N2, and then N3 field. N3 is the direction of a spiral. Then this N1, N2, and N3 constitute the this so-called drive-by or the coordinate system with the right-handedness. So then you can introduce some slowly bearing phase angles, namely the Euler angles representing this coordinate system. So what eventually we observed is, this is mathematics. What we eventually observed is that once you have the change of the direction of the spiral wave number, then you end up with a phase change of a phason. Namely, these 2 degrees of freedom are related by so-called Berry phase term. So that's why once you have a vortex of this N3 direction, then you also have a vortex of this phason degrees of freedom. So this composite phason, the vortex structure for the N3 and also the phason phase result in this very interesting Swiss roll type structure for the vortex of the spiral systems. And this is our prediction. And actually, this structure has been observed by some TEM image in terms of in the system of the iron germanium, like this. So this rotating spiral structure. In Japanese, this might be called a norimaki structure in sushi, but this one can be beautifully corresponding to the theoretical analysis of Berry phase. So, and actually, this can be compactly given by some Higgs models, just like this. And then what I want to say is that this Berry phase structure is implicitly hidden in this spiral or helical magnet. And this will be our next very interesting direction of the development. Thank you very much for your attention.
Can you please, I have two questions if you may. The first is, how do you define the spin current?
Oh, okay. So once you do not have, okay. In the first part, the spin orbit interaction is a kind of a probe to detect the spin current. Then before introducing the spin orbit coupling, so the definition of the spin current is very straightforward.
Right.
So just you have a conserved quantity, which is Sz, for example. Then from the continuity equation, you can define the spin current.
But what
very uniquely. Then put the spin orbit coupling. Then the probe is a ferroelectric moment. So that is the way we consider this problem, because the spin orbit is not that big.
So you consider it as a perturbation?
Yeah.
And the second question is, maybe you can give some intuitive explanation why two magnon processes contribute to the polarization?
Okay. So this is a little bit mathematical, but then starting from the collinear structure along the B axis, then you can describe the, this transverse direction spin component in terms of the boson operator, right? So this Si cross Sj is just given by this angle between the two neighboring spin, right? So then that one is just given by the product of alpha and beta or alpha and alpha, right? Because you need to create the vector product of the two. And actually, if you calculate the linear term, that all cancels out for the uniform component. So the dominant contribution is coming from two magnons.
I have a question about the ab initio calculations.
Oh, yeah.
For instance, if you look at lanthanum MnO3, you get a polarization that's 0.4 microcoulomb per centimeter square, which probably could be measured. If it would be there. Also you get a single ion anisotropy because of the EG T2G mixing at the same time.
Yeah.
And that one is known to be very, very, very small. So one would, by that argument, also expect that the polarization would be very small.
Actually, this value, we always have this 0.02, of the order of 0.02, which is three or four times smaller than the observed of the value experimentally. So that is still a puzzle. But because this value is actually very sensitive to the actual distortion of a crystal, and also the this is a calculation for the displacement dependence of the polarization. If you slightly, very small displacement of the oxygen atom induce the polarization quite a lot. So of the same order. So that's why this additional ingredient can explain the observed value, we believe.
But for lanthanum MnO3,
yeah.
Like iron and stuff,
Actually, we didn't calculate that single spin isotropy at the moment. But you're saying this spin of coupling is rather small in this.
Very small, because you don't have the Hubble group.
Yeah, so if we put the large U, then this one is very small, actually, because the energy denominator gets small. Yeah, that is true.
Okay, so in your this next slide or something, you have a maximum polarization for iron, 3+, yeah?
Yeah.
D5 configuration, which is looks like strange. Because
I agree.
The orbital moment is zero, and all this effect is related probably with orbital moment. Could you just make some hand-waving argument why?
Okay, thank you very much. That is exactly we first thought, why the D5 is large. But actually, if you have this gap very large, then you are completely right. But in real systems, this gap between the occupied EG and the empty T2G is not so large. So that's why there's a mixing in terms of the spin orbit coupling. So this channel is very effective. So that's why this EG T2G mixing gives you a rather large, just like that.
Can one say simply that in this case, due to this mixing is especially large because kind of a phase space argument. You have all states with spin up occupied, all states with spin down empty, and then you have more phase space for this mixing.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah?
Yeah.
Maxim?
I just wondered what are the charge or polarization properties of these defects that you showed in the very end of the talk. Magnetic defects that you showed in the very end of your talk,
Okay.
What are the polarization and charge properties?
I wanted to ask the same question.
Okay. So actually, I think that there is an essential difference between the Jarzynski-Moria type spiral and the frustration in this spiral. So actually, I think you can understand the following argument. Yeah, so in this case, this spin current is zero, right? Because the spin current is canceled by this Jarzynski-Moria interaction. So that's why I do not expect such interesting properties from the viewpoint of the charge and polarization, as in your argument for the, right?
So, why spin current is zero? Why
spin current is zero, I think. Because it is always canceled, right?
Well, maybe this red and blue cancel each other, but if I consider only this red kind of spiral, then each locally there is polarization. There is spin current locally at each pair, we have spin current. Maybe they cancel.
I understand. So you are saying that this curvature produces spin current.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is quite possible. Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to know this technical detail about this aperture calculation, about this size of this effect. When you say that the effect is biggest for the iron 3+, but smaller for, let's say, the titanium and the vanadium, what crystal structure do you took for this vanadium, lanthanum O3? Is it locally perfect point group OH symmetry?
Sorry, you are talking about this?
That one, yeah. Vanadium and titanium, what did you took for that? Is there any spin orbit? Did you quench the orbital moment on vanadium or titanium?
No. I didn't take any antilla distortion.
Nothing. It's really perfect OH locally.
Perfect.
So there's a strong spin orbit moment locally.
Just spin orbit. So the purpose is to compare various processes for the spin orbit coupling. So then it turned out that this one is okay. So the spin orbit within T2G manifold seems to be not so active. We still do not understand why, but.
I mean, there is spin orbit moment, but there is a strong spin orbit moment.
Yeah, this is only for the polarization.
Mine's also just a clarification question on the ab initio calculation.
Yeah.
So are you freezing in a spiral over a supercell? Is that what's going on?
Sorry, I didn't.
Is that the
So this is a four period.
Okay.
So 90 degree rotation.
And the same kind of rotation for all of the different transition
metals?
Exactly.
Okay. So in that sense, this is a fictitious, right?
Okay. So and does it scale? Did you try other spiral lengths? Is it kind of linear?
If you change the periodicity of the spiral, it also scales with SI coefficient.
Okay.
So there's another reason we believe that the spin current is most dominant.
Right. Thanks.
You may have said this, but have you tried to come up with some connection between these defects of the spiral structure and the non-Fermi liquid transport that you can see in MNSI?
Actually, I tried to connect that, and I discussed with Fentiu in this summer. So then we end up with a rather negative conclusions, actually. First, I thought that this gauge field fluctuation leads to the non-Fermi liquid temperature dependence in the quantum disorder side of this phase diagram. But actually, once you have this, you need to couple this magnetic system to the fermion system or the charge carrier system. So that is actually very weak in this case. Then I could not observe this resistivity. So I need to search for another possibility. Maybe Sentry has another idea.
Yeah. Okay. I see.
You have no comment?
I think we have to close the discussion and thank you, speaker, again. Or maybe not to close, but transfer it to the coffee pause.